Open your Bibles to Acts 3 and verse 22. We're actually going to spend the next 3 weeks on this verse, believe it or not. And most of that 3 weeks will actually be spent on three words. So I'm going to spend 3 weeks preaching on, the better part of 3 weeks, preaching on three words. So as I read this verse, see if you can figure out which three they are. Acts 3 and verse 22. For Moses truly said unto the fathers, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren like unto me. Him shall ye hear in all things whatsoever he shall say unto you. So we're going to look at the first part of that verse there, where it says, For Moses truly said unto the fathers, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren. Peter is quoting here from Acts, or referring to Deuteronomy 18 and verses 15 and then 18 through 19. Let's go back there and look at that. Deuteronomy 18 and verse 15. Deuteronomy 18 and 15. The Lord thy God will raise up unto thee a prophet from the midst of thee, of thy brethren, like unto me. Unto him shall ye hearken. Now this is Moses speaking. So when he says there that the Lord would raise up a prophet in the midst of them, like unto me, he's referring to himself. So the Lord would raise up a prophet from the midst of Israel that would be like Moses in some way or another. Let me just keep reading here in verse 16, and Peter will, the rest of this quote picks up in verses 18 and 19. Verse 16, according to all that thou desirest of the Lord thy God in Horeb, in the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God, neither let me see this great fire any more, that I die not. And the Lord said unto me, They have well spoken that which they have spoken. I will raise them up a prophet from among their brethren like unto thee. So now it's the Lord speaking, and he's saying the prophet's going to be like unto Moses. And I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak unto them all that I shall command him. And it shall come to pass that whosoever will not hearken unto my words, which he shall speak in my name, I will require it of him. Now we'll look at Peter quoting the last part of these verses here in the coming verses in Acts 3:23. I'll wait till we get to that to comment on the rest of this. But the Lord was going to raise up a prophet. The prophet was going to be like unto Moses, and he was going to speak the words that God gave him to speak. And in case you haven't figured it out, this prophet that Moses prophesied of is the Lord Jesus Christ. And we can see that from the context of Acts 3, there in verse 20, which we looked at here a week or two ago. In Acts 3 and verse 20, Peter says, And he shall send Jesus Christ, which before was preached unto you, whom the heaven must receive until the times of restitution of all things, which God hath spoken by the mouth of all his holy prophets since the world began. For Moses truly said unto the fathers, A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren. Right, so clearly, Jesus Christ is the prophet that God would raise up, and Moses was one of the prophets that God had spoke these things to Israel by since the world began. And we looked at last Sunday how all the prophets taught this, and the first of the prophets, or at least the first one that wrote books of the Bible in the order that we have them in anyway, I'll put it that way, because Job also, or Elihu, would have been a prophet writing Job, and that was probably written before Genesis. But anyway, in the order of the books that we have, Moses would be the first prophet that had prophesied of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we can also see this from John 4 and verse 19. John 4, verse 19. So Jesus had been prophesied of 1,500 years before he came. That's about when Moses wrote the five books of the law there. And actually, he had been prophesied long before that. He had been prophesied the whole way back with Adam and Eve and other places. But this would have been, you know, when it was first written down anyway, 1,500 years before he came. John 4 and verse 19. This is when Jesus had met the woman, the Samaritan woman, at Jacob's well, and he was having this discourse with her. And it says there, "The woman saith unto him, Sir, I perceive that thou art a prophet." So even this woman, who had a lot of things wrong, was a Samaritan, didn't have her doctrine right. Jesus told her that ye worship ye know not what. So she didn't even know what she was worshiping. And she also had a bunch of different husbands in her life, five of them. And so anyway, all these problems and mental cloudiness, and yet she still perceived that Jesus was a prophet. There was something about how he spake and what he told her that she recognized that there's something special about this man. And Jesus had said in John 5 and verse 46 that Moses had written of him. In John 5 and verse 46, this is the part of the passage that I read this morning before the sermon. Jesus said, "For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me." So, in a minimum, he wrote of him when he prophesied of this prophet that would come. He also wrote of him, though, like we looked at with different prophecies of the Passover lamb, the scapegoat, right, the sin goat, and the different sacrifices. All those things pointed to Christ. But in this case, he pointed to him as that prophet that would come. That would be unique for the nation. Now it says there that Moses truly said unto the fathers, "A prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren." And Jesus indeed was raised up from among his brethren, from the Jewish people. And we can see that in a few different places. Matthew 13 and verse 57 is the first one that we'll look at. Matthew 13. 57. Now, of course, we all know this, and we take a lot of things for granted because we've grown up hearing the Bible, reading the Bible. But if you didn't grow up hearing and reading the Bible, these things would be quite important to you, because if you were trying to be convinced that Jesus was the Messiah, then he would have to meet all the criteria. And one of the criteria was he'd have to be raised up among his brethren, among the Jewish people, not among some other people on the earth. Matthew 13 and verse 57. "And they were offended in him." This is when he was preaching to the people of his own area where he grew up, there in Galilee, I believe it was, at this time. "They were offended in him. But Jesus said unto them, A prophet is not without honor, save in his own country and in his own house. And he did not many mighty works there because of their unbelief." So here he is identifying himself as a prophet, and he's from among his brethren, right in his own country, among his own house, his own kin. And the point that I made there earlier about how we take a lot of things for granted, I'm reading a book right now called The Historical Jesus, I think is what it's called. And just realizing how many heretics there are out there. There are people out there that just, they don't believe the gospel record. They don't believe the scriptures. I mean, that's no surprise to any of us. But not only don't they believe it, because lots of people don't believe it, but these people will actually go to lengths to try to explain it away. Instead of just saying, "I don't believe," right? Then they'll write these volumes about the life of Jesus, and they'll come up with all these fanciful stories about Jesus being of the sect of the Essenes and being raised by the Essenes when he was younger and going to India when he was a kid and all this crazy stuff and learning all this mystical stuff and he was doing magic. And they just come up with all this garbage. And they've been doing this for a long time. This really started in earnest in the late 1700s and in the 1800s. And anyway, this book is detailing some of that, and this author is making a case for the historical Jesus, and which would just seem obvious to us that he has to be a historical figure, because if he's not a historical figure, then it's just all a lie. If he didn't really exist and he wasn't born when he said, when the Bible said he was, and if he didn't do the things the Bible said he did, then he didn't do any of the prophecies that the Old Testament said the Messiah would do. And so this idea that Jesus can just be some figure that didn't really exist, but he can just, he's a great moral teacher, he can teach us things, and he can be like the other gods are out there that we can aspire to, you know, be like or something. It's just a bunch of nonsense. If he didn't actually exist and everything written in the Bible about him isn't literally true, then what are we wasting our time with? It's just, these people are despicable. When I was reading this stuff, I just thought, you know what? If you don't believe it, just say you don't believe it and quit making your judgment worse. Because can you imagine somebody that stands before Jesus Christ on Judgment Day someday and had written a book telling a bunch of lies about him and making up fanciful stories about his life and saying he didn't really do miracles? It was really Luke, the beloved physician, that was giving people medicine that were healing them. This is the kind of garbage that these people come up with. Can you imagine standing before God on Judgment Day having written all that kind of stuff? If I were them, I'd just keep their mouth shut, make their judgment a little bit less painful. But anyway, let's get back to this. Jesus was raised up from among the Jewish people. Matthew 21 and verse 11. Matthew 21 and verse 11. And the multitude said, "This is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee." Nazareth, Galilee was a region in northern Israel. Nazareth was a little town in northern Israel, and Jesus was a prophet from that area. So he indeed was raised up from among his brethren. And then one more in Luke 7, 16 through 17. Luke 7, 16 through 17. "And there came a fear on all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet is risen up among us, and that God hath visited his people. And this rumor of him went throughout all Judea and throughout all the region round about." So a great prophet is arisen in Judea, in the areas around it, from among his brethren, in other words. "And the believing Jews were looking for that prophet." And that's what he was referred to as in different places in the scripture. They knew this prophecy that Moses had made, and they were looking for that prophet that was to come. And maybe compared with the book of Daniel, they probably knew that it was about the time that that prophet should come. And they were paying attention, trying to identify who he was. We can see this from Luke 1 and verse 21. John 1, 21. John 1, 21. This is when John the Baptist started preaching. "And they asked him, 'What then? Art thou Elias?'" That is Elijah. "And he saith, 'I am not.' 'Art thou that prophet?' And he answered, 'No.'" Right? So that prophet most likely refers to the prophet that Moses had prophesied of. He would raise them up a prophet like unto him. I suppose they could have been referring to another one, but more than likely that prophet refers to what Moses prophesied. And then John 7 and verse 40. So they were looking for it anyway. The point was, when they saw John the Baptist, they thought, well, maybe he's the one. Maybe he's Elijah. The Lord said he would send Elijah before that great and dreadful day, the coming of the Lord, there in Malachi. And so there was going to be a prophet that was like Elijah that would come. And so they thought maybe John was Elijah. And John said he wasn't, which is interesting because maybe John didn't know that he was, because John was Elijah. He just apparently didn't know it, because Jesus identified him as Elijah later on. So anyway, they thought, well, if he wasn't Elijah, maybe he's that prophet Moses spoke of, and he wasn't that prophet either. John 7, 16 through 17. "Jesus answered them and said, 'My doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me.'" Is that the verse that I wanted? Luke. That's why it didn't look right. Luke 16. through 7. Luke 7, 16 through 17, not John 7. Luke 7, 16 through 17. Get to the right book, the text might make a little more sense. Luke 7, 16 through 17. And there came a fear on all, and they glorified God, saying that a great prophet is risen up among us, and that God hath visited his people. Okay, hold on a second. That's the verse that I read previously. What I wanted was John 7, 40. So I had Luke 7, 16 through 17, and John 7, 40, and I combined them to be John 7, 16 through 17, and then thought I messed up and went back to Luke. So third time, I might actually get this right. John 7 and verse 40. And if I don't get it right this time, we're just going to move on to the next point. John 7 and verse 40. Many of the people, therefore, when they heard this saying, said, of a truth, this is the prophet. So, the prophet, that prophet, I think it's pretty obvious they're referring to that prophet that Moses had prophesied would come. And Jesus truly was him. And when they saw his miracles, they knew that Jesus was, quote, that prophet. Let's look at John 6 and verse 14. John 6, 14. Then those men, when they had seen the miracle that Jesus did, said, this is of a truth that prophet that should come into the world. So that prophet, Moses had said, would be like unto me. And these are the three words that I'm going to spend the next 3 weeks talking about. Like unto me. I've never really heard a sermon, an exhaustive sermon, on this particular topic. I've made reference to it before, that Jesus was like unto Moses, and gave him, you know, maybe one or two reasons or something like that. And I've heard other preachers make passing reference to the fact that Jesus was like Moses in a few ways or something. But I've never heard a sermon really showing all the ways or a lot of the ways that Moses, or that Jesus was like unto Moses. So I'm going to take the opportunity now for the next few weeks and look at least 34 different ways that Jesus was like unto Moses. There probably are more, and somebody else could look at this list and probably think of some other ones. But these are the ones that popped into my mind as I was pondering on this verse. So we're going to look at these basically in chronological order, sort of following the life of Christ. Maybe not perfectly in order, but close to it. So the first way that Jesus was like Moses is that he was spared from death by a murderous king in early childhood. Let's look at Matthew 2, 13 through 16. Matthew 2, 13 through 16. And when they were departed, this is when Jesus was a young child. He's called their young child several times. He's probably about a year and 7 months old. He's either 7 months old or a year and 7 months old. And I've given my reasons for that previously. I think it was in the series that I did on Luke chapter 1. And I'm not going to go into all that detail again, giving my reasons why that is. But anyway, he's a young child. He's not. This is not when he was in the manger, when he was born. That's in Luke. This account here in Matthew is later on in his life. He's still young, though. So in verse 13, and when they were departed, behold, the angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream, saying, arise and take the young child and his mother and flee into Egypt, and be there until I bring thee word, for Herod will seek the young child to destroy him. When he arose, he took the young child and his mother by night and departed into Egypt, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. Then Herod, when he saw that he was mocked of the wise men, was exceeding wroth, and sent forth and slew all the children that were in Bethlehem and in all the coasts thereof, from 2 years old and under, according to the time which he had diligently inquired of the wise men. So when Jesus was a young child, still basically a toddler, I mean, either a baby or a toddler at this point, but very young, he was spared from death from a murderous king. In his case, it was King Herod. Moses, likewise, was spared from death from a murderous king when he was a very young child, 3 months old or so. And we can see this from Exodus 1, 15 through 17. As a matter of fact, he was spared from death at birth, and then he was spared from death again at about 3 months old. The first time he was spared from death was by the midwives, which we'll read about here, and then his mother also kept him for 3 months before she couldn't conceal him any longer. Exodus 1, 15 through 17, and then verse 22. And the king of Egypt spake to the Hebrew midwives, of which the name of the one was Shiphrah, and the name of the other Puah, and he said, when you do the office of a midwife to the Hebrew women, and see them upon the stools, if ye be a son, if it be a son, then ye shall kill him. But if it be a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared God, and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. So here are these midwives made an act of civil disobedience. They disobeyed the king. And this is the mightiest man in the world. This is the ruler of the empire of Egypt, the greatest empire at this time. And they disobeyed his order. They saved the men children alive. And then they lied about it. Because when Pharaoh realized they weren't doing it, and then they go and question them, and they said, oh, these Hebrew women, they're not like the Egyptians. They're just, I mean, they popped this baby out, and they're just up running around. They're gone. We didn't even get there in time. Their labor was like just lickety-split. Now, part of the reason why their labor might have been lickety-split was because if you read this passage here, you can learn something. Not that I know anything about this, but you can learn something about how childbirth can be done more effectively than it is with modern hospitals. You notice it says there that they're on the stools. They're not lying down horizontal in bed. They're on stools. And what's happening? Gravity is pushing that baby out. What do we do today? Lay them down horizontally in a bed and then make the mother push them out. That doesn't make any sense. Get on the stools. Get on a ball. They're doing that these days. Like I said, not that I know anything about this, but right there it is. Thousands of years ago, people had it figured out, and then now we don't have it figured out at all. Anyway, verse 22. And Pharaoh charged all his people, saying, every son that is born ye shall cast into the river, and every daughter ye shall save alive. So he had ordered the murder of these children, and Moses was spared by the midwives. And he was also spared by his mother later on. In chapter 2 and verse 2, and the women conceived and bare a son, and when she saw him, that he was a goodly child, she hid him 3 months. So again, spared from death by a murderous king in early childhood, just like Jesus. So from the very get-go, before either of these two prophets were even able to talk, they already share something big in common, right? Jesus is like unto Moses in that way. Jesus was called out of Egypt. Let's look at Matthew 2 and verse 15. Matthew 2:15, which we already read, but let me read it to you again. Matthew 2:15, and was there until the death of Herod, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken of the Lord by the prophet, saying, out of Egypt have I called my son. So this was a prophecy that was made by Hosea, and Matthew says that this applies to Jesus Christ. So Jesus Christ was called out of Egypt. And likewise was Moses called out of Egypt with the rest of the nation of Israel. And we can see that from Hosea 11 and verse 1 from the passage that this is quoted from. Hosea 11 and verse 1. When Israel was a child, then I loved him and called my son out of Egypt. All right, so again here, a dual application. If you were a Jew reading this when Hosea wrote it, you would assume that he's referring to the nation of Israel and God calling them out of Egypt through the promise or through the wilderness into the promised land. And you'd be right that that's true, but there was a spiritual application to this, referring to Jesus Christ being called out of Egypt. But Israel was called out of Egypt, and who led them? Moses. Moses was called out of Egypt, along with the rest of the nation, and Jesus was called out of Egypt. So there's another similarity. The third similarity between Jesus and Moses is that Jesus, now this is interesting because it's, in a way, this is opposite, but it's opposite and similar at the same time. Jesus returned from Egypt when those who sought his life were dead, while Moses returned to Egypt when those who sought his life were dead. So like I said, sort of opposite, but similar. They were just going in different directions, but it's the same kind of thing. Let's look at that. Matthew 2, 19 through 21. Matthew 2, 19 through 21. But when Herod was dead, behold, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt, saying, "Arise and take the young child and his mother and go into the land of Israel, for they are dead which sought the young child's life." And he arose and took the young child and his mother and came into the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus did reign in Judea in the room of his father Herod, he was afraid to go thither. Notwithstanding, being warned of God in a dream, he turned aside into the parts of Galilee, and he came and dwelt in a city called Nazareth, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the prophets, "He shall be called a Nazarene." So after Herod dies, Jesus is brought out of Egypt, returns from Egypt, into Israel. In Moses' case, after Pharaoh dies, he is returned back to Egypt. And we can see that from Exodus 4, 19 through 20. If you remember the story of Moses, when he was about 40 years old, he went to see his brethren, the children of Israel. He saw one of the Egyptians smiting an Israelite, probably, I assume, to the point where he was going to die or his life was in danger. Moses defended him. He killed the Egyptian. He buried him in the sand. He thought that his people would appreciate that. And then the next day he comes down and he sees two Israelites striving and he tries to put them at peace. And the one says, "Are you going to kill me like you did that Egyptian?" And Moses realized that the thing was known. And when Pharaoh heard about it, Pharaoh sought to kill Moses. Moses fled into the land of Midian. Well, then when Pharaoh dies, as we're going to read about here, Moses returned to Egypt. Exodus 4, 19 through 20. And the Lord said unto Moses in Midian, "Go, return into Egypt, for all the men are dead which sought thy life." And Moses took his wife and his sons and set them upon an ass, and he returned to the land of Egypt, and Moses took the rod of God in his hand. So, like I said, similar, but just different directions. So Jesus and Moses, again, bear some similarities here. The fourth thing that makes Jesus like unto Moses is that Jesus was raised by a person who was not his biological parent. Now, this is not identical because in Jesus' case, he was raised by a father who was not his biological parent. In Moses' case, he was raised by a mother who was not his biological parent. Possibly a father, too. I imagine his mother, if she wasn't married at the time when she took him as her son, more than likely in the next 40 years, she, or in the next 20 years or whatever, she most likely married. So he would have been raised by a father who was not his biological father as well. But we know for sure he was raised by a mother who was not his biological mother. But first of all, let's look at Jesus here. Jesus was raised by a father who was not his biological father. He was what we would call today his stepfather, or his adopted father. Luke 3 and verse 23. And Jesus himself began to be about 30 years of age, being, and this is very important, this parenthesis here, as was supposed, the son of Joseph, which was the son of Heli. So Jesus was supposed to be the son of Joseph. As far as probably most people knew at that time, they just assumed that Joseph was his father. I doubt they were out there broadcasting that Mary had been caused to conceive as a virgin, and right, they probably weren't out talking about that. It said that Mary kept these things in her heart. They probably just kept that on the down low, and so people thought that he was Joseph's son. I mean, isn't that what they said about Jesus when they started seeing him begin his miracles, his ministry, and they said, "Isn't this the carpenter's son?" Like they thought he was Joseph's son. Mary even refers to him, to Joseph, as his father, right? So they took him just like Joseph took him, just like he was his own son, and raised him. Now let's look at Luke 2 and verse 48. Luke 2, 48. This is when they went, when Jesus was 12, and they went back to Jerusalem, and then they forgot about him and left him behind, and then they come back looking for him and find him in the temple with the doctors of the law. And when they saw him, they were amazed, and his mother said unto him, "Son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Behold, thy father and I have sought thee sorrowing." So she refers to Joseph as his father, which is nothing wrong with that. People do that all the time. You know, stepfathers that are fathers of children from a very young age, they'll refer to them, they'll call them their father, and the stepfather considers the child his child. And then in verse 51, Jesus treated Joseph like a father, obeyed him like a father as well. And he went down with them and came to Nazareth and was subject unto them, but his mother kept all these sayings in her heart. So he was subject unto them, both of them, father and mother. So, you know, people can learn a lesson about this too. If your father is deceased or your father abandons you and your mother remarries a good man, then, you know, nothing wrong with treating him like your real father, obeying him like your real father, and with a father stepping up there and taking that responsibility. That's a good thing. Same thing happened to Moses, only it was a different parent. Exodus 2 and verse 10. Exodus 2 and verse 10. So we just read there earlier in the chapter that Moses' mother saw he was a goodly child. She hid him 3 months, and then it goes on to say when she could no longer hide him, she built a little ark, a little boat, put him in there, and set him among the reeds there in the Nile, and just waited to see what was going to happen. And Pharaoh's daughter comes down. She's going to bathe in the Nile, and she hears this baby crying and finds Moses in this little boat. And verse 10, Exodus 2:10, and the child grew, and she brought him unto Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son, and she called his name Moses, and she said, "Behold, because I drew him out of the water." The name Moses means drawn out. That's why she called him Moses, because she drew him out of the water. Which, interestingly enough, the man that drew Israel out of Egypt into the Promised Land, his name meant to draw out. Kind of interesting. God probably had that all planned out ahead of time, I imagine. So, yes, he was taken by Pharaoh's daughter to be her own. The fifth way in which Jesus was like unto Moses is that Jesus had a royal lineage through an adopted parent. Let's go back to Matthew 1 and verse 6. So Jesus' stepfather Joseph is actually the man from whom Jesus derived his royal lineage. It wasn't through Mary. It was through his stepfather. Jesus had a right to the throne of Israel. He had a right to sit on David's throne because of his stepfather, Joseph, not because of Mary. Let's look at this. Matthew 1 and verse 6. Matthew 1, 6. This is the genealogy of Jesus Christ through Joseph. We just looked at that in Luke chapter 3. We looked at the beginning of the genealogy of Christ, but that's actually through Mary. Now, you might think it's through Joseph because it says Joseph was the son of Heli, but it's not through Joseph. It's through Mary, and I'll show you why. Let's see here. Matthew 1 and verse 6. And Jesse begat David the king, and David the king begat Solomon of her that had been the wife of Urias. So in this lineage, this is the lineage. They're both Joseph and Mary came through David. They're both of the tribe of Judah. They both came through David. But Mary came through Nathan, David's son Nathan. Joseph came through Solomon, which was the royal son. The rest of the kings came through Solomon. And we can see that if you look down at verse 16. And Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Now notice how the scripture words this very carefully. I'll get to the first part here in a second, but I just want to get the second part. And Jacob begat Joseph, the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, which is called Christ. It does not say, and Joseph begat Christ. It words it very carefully. Of whom was born Jesus, referring to Mary. So Joseph's the husband of Mary, of whom was born Jesus, who is called Christ. Now, this lineage is the lineage of Joseph, because it says there, Jacob begat Joseph. Joseph was Jacob's son. He begat him. In Luke's gospel, in that genealogy, it's a different genealogy because it doesn't go through Solomon. It goes through Nathan. You want me to show it to you? I'll show it to you. Luke 3 and verse 31. The first thing I want you to notice about this genealogy is it doesn't say anything about begat. It doesn't say so-and-so begat so-and-so begat so-and-so. It says there that Joseph, in verse 23, Joseph was the son of Heli, which was the son of Matthat, which was the son of Levi. And if you look at that genealogy and you go back, it's not the same at all. Like, none of the names are the same. Till the whole way to get to David, none of the names are the same. So this genealogy is going backwards. So it's going from Joseph backwards through time. And the other one is going down through time from Abraham and David and down to Joseph. But when you go in both genealogies between David and Joseph, they're all different names. All of them are different, right? It's a totally different line. Joseph can't have two different fathers that are from two totally different lines. Obviously, you only got one father, right? So in this genealogy in Luke, it says that he was the son of Heli, who was the son of so-and-so. When you get up to verse 31, which was the son of Meli, which was the son of Menan, which was the son of Mattathat, which was the son of Nathan, which was the son of David. Okay, so different son of David. Some people would and have thrown up their hands and say, oh, this is a contradiction, right? The genealogies aren't the same. It's not a contradiction at all. Matthew is a genealogy of Joseph. His father literally begat him. That's what it says. And Luke is a genealogy of Mary. But why does it say Joseph was a son of Heli? He's the son-in-law of Heli. A son-in-law can be called a son. Right? That's not uncommon. I know people that call, well, my wife calls my mother mom. My sister-in-law calls my mother mom. So that's not uncommon at all. So this is the genealogy of Mary. Joseph was the son-in-law. And you have examples of this in Scripture. Actually, I'm not going to get into too far into the weeds, but this was David, for instance, was called Saul's son. Saul referred to David as his son, and David was his son-in-law. He was not his son. So anyway, just thought I'd throw that in there in case you had ever wondered about that. So Jesus was raised by Joseph, who was not his biological parent. No, royal line. He became heir of the throne through Joseph. That's where I was going with this in the first place. I kind of got sidetracked. In Matthew, you see there that Joseph was the son of Solomon, which was the kingly line. And that's how Jesus had a right to the throne, was through Joseph, not through Mary. Because imagine if it was the other way around, or imagine if Jesus was just born of an Israelite man, and imagine if his father would have been in the lineage that Mary was, and his father would have been a descendant of Nathan through David. He would have had no right to the throne of Israel. Nathan's kids had no right to the throne of Israel. It was Solomon and Solomon's children. They were the only ones that had a right to the throne. So Jesus would not have received the right to the throne through his mother's genealogy. It's through his father's genealogy. It was through his stepfather's lineage that Jesus was able to assume the throne of David, which is also interesting. And I'm not going to go into all the details about this, but there was a man named Jeconiah, and it was said, write this man childless. None of his sons, none of his descendants will sit on the throne of David. And Jeconiah was one of the last kings there before Israel was taken into Babylonian exile. And that prophecy was true. Jeconias was written childless. He didn't have a son to sit on the throne. And yet, Jeconias' descendant, Jesus Christ, sat on the throne. But he wasn't technically his son. He was through Joseph, through a stepfather. So that scripture was fulfilled in a really interesting way. All right, anyway, I got to get on with this. Moses, likewise, had a royal lineage through an adopted parent. Let's look at Hebrews 11, 24 through 26. Hebrews 11, 24 through 26. By faith Moses, when he was come to years, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for a season, esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than all the treasures in Egypt, for he had respect unto the recompense of the reward. Right? Moses had all the treasures in Egypt. In other words, he was in the king's royal line. He experienced all living in the palace and all of what a king would experience. Moses did. And this was all through an adopted parent. This was through his mother and maybe his mother's husband. And there's some evidence. I'm not going to chase this rabbit either. But there is some evidence. I saw a video the other day that people have done in Egyptology, and they think that they may have identified who Moses was in Egyptian records, and he was one of the pharaohs, essentially. I don't know if he was like the pharaoh, but he was one of the royalty in Egypt. He was unmarried. There's not much said until after he was in his 40s. There's nothing said of him anymore, and he just kind of disappears. And there's some interesting stuff. I don't remember all the details, but it was quite fascinating, and it made a lot of sense. So Moses probably was, you know, one of the princes in Egypt. He wasn't just some Joe Schmo. He was, you know, he would have been one of the higher ups there. All right, the sixth way. that Jesus was like Moses is that he was a learned man from his youth. Let's look at Luke 2, 46 through 47. Luke 2, 46 through 47. See, now you probably looked at this outline and you saw little more than a half a page and you thought, huh, we're getting out of here early today. But anytime you have silly thoughts like that, count the verses. Don't look at the number of pages. Count the verses. That's what I do. That's how I figure out how much outline I need. I count the verses. I get around 30 or so. I know I've got about an hour's worth of sermon. All right. Luke 2, 46 through 47. And it came to pass that after 3 days they found him in the temple. This is speaking of Jesus when he was 12. We looked at this a minute ago. Sitting in the midst of the doctors. This wouldn't be MDs. This would be, you know, PhDs in the law of Moses, essentially. Sitting in the midst of the doctors, both hearing them and asking them questions. And all that heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. As a 12-year-old boy. How many 12-year-old boys do you know that would sit with PhDs in theology and they would be impressed with his understanding and answers? No, not very many. Jesus was a little different. Let's look at Matthew 13 and verse 54. Matthew 13, 54. Tell you what, no theologian would have been impressed by me in a meeting when I was 12. I can tell you that much. Well, he wouldn't be impressed at 44 either, but he definitely wouldn't have been impressed at 12. Matthew 13:54. And when he was come into his own country, he taught them in their synagogue, insomuch that they were astonished and said, "Whence hath this man this wisdom and these mighty works?" Okay, so he was impressive as a 12-year-old, and now he's impressive as a 30-year-old. They are wondering where in the world did he get this wisdom, because he hadn't been formally trained. He had never studied formally, and they mention this in John 7 and verse 15. John 7:15. And the Jews marveled, which means they're really shocked, they're in awe. And the Jews marveled, saying, "How knoweth this man letters, having never learned?" Letters, referring to learning, books. How does this man know? How does he have this education? He's never been formally educated. He wasn't like Paul. He didn't grow up at the feet of Gamaliel. Right? He was just a carpenter's son. You know, he would have just been just like the average Joe as far as his education goes, except he spent a lot of time in the synagogue, a lot of time reading the scriptures. And the same can be true of us. You can have great learning and wisdom and understanding just by spending time studying the scriptures, not by being formally educated. As a matter of fact, if you want to have a good understanding of the scripture, the last place you probably want to go to is a formal education establishment. You will go in there, this has been what I've witnessed anyway, you will go in there as a believer, and you probably will leave there as an unbeliever, or if not, at least not as solid a believer or a skeptic, some postmodern whack job. And this happened to a cousin of mine. It's probably the last place you want to go. Many a child have been destroyed by being sent to seminaries, Bible colleges, and of course secular universities are even worse. But yeah, it's a dangerous place. Moses was the same way. Moses was a learned man from his youth. Acts 7:21 through 22. Acts 7:21 through 22. And when he was cast out, Pharaoh's daughter took him up, we read about that back in Exodus, and nourished him for her own son. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians, and was mighty in words and deeds. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. But he was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. And the Egyptians were the most advanced civilization on the planet at that time. The Egyptians did incredible things. Things that people today still haven't really figured out how they did it. The pyramids are a magnificent architectural structure. And I just read a book on that, which, again, not going on a very long rabbit chase here at all, just really, really short one. But I read a book on this recently that I got from Conrad, got from Mary Dell after Conrad died. And this man made the case, which makes a lot of sense to me, that the pyramids were not built by the traditional idea that it was chiseling them out of rock, you know, carving them out of rock and hoisting these stones. These stones, some of these stones are like literally 500 tons. I mean, massive, massive stones. And the idea is they quarried them out miles away, cut them perfectly, you know, within microns of an inch, and then hauled them miles and miles, and then somehow pushed them up this great big ramp. And it's all totally ridiculous. And that's why people say that aliens built them and all kinds of other stuff, because they look at it and they're like, there's no way human beings could have ever done this. It's impossible. And so then people come up with all kinds of wacky ideas. And this guy was I forget what it is, like a geopolymerist or something like that. He was a chemist and knew what he was talking about and had spent his life working with rocks and cement and that kind of stuff. And he looks at it and he's like, the pyramids are cement. The stones are cement. They're basically synthetic stone. The Egyptians had figured out alchemy, which was the foundation of chemistry, and they'd figured out how to make cement, and they used limestone and made cement, and they just did what Austin does. They put up forms and they poured the stones right in place, which makes perfect sense. That's why there's like 0.001 inches in between each stone, because they were poured in place. That's why you have bigger stones inside the pyramid than the doors and the hallways of the pyramid are. I mean, and of course, all of the Egyptologists and all the historians and whatever all poo-poo this guy, like, oh, that's ridiculous. It's like, that's not ridiculous. It makes perfect sense. How else would they have done it? So anyway, he made a really good point in the book. He showed some historical evidence of that. He found some writings in the Egyptian literature that, if interpreted correctly, instead of by Egyptologists that know nothing about this technology, if you read some of their writings, some of the words that they translated, if you understand what they were actually talking about, it really supports this idea. It just makes a whole lot more sense. So that's all I'll say about that. All right, let's see. So Moses was learned. Oh, yeah. So the wisdom of the Egyptians. That's where I was at with that. He was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians. So the Egyptians were a very advanced society, had great learning. They figured out all kinds of stuff. As a matter of fact, okay, one more little thing. They had apparently the technology that they found that they could build these ceramic vessels, and they would submerge them in seawater when they were traveling, and they would basically end up with fresh water inside the vessels. Like, somehow the vessels would desalinate the water and they'd have fresh water in the vessels, and all kinds of stuff. And these people were amazing. And Moses was learned in all that stuff. Literature, mathematics, I'm sure, physics, chemistry, you name it. And religion, he probably got a bunch of garbage taught to him religiously too, back in those days. But anyway, he would have philosophy, all kinds of stuff. He would have been a very, very learned man. And in that, Jesus and Moses were similar. They were both learned from their youth. Right, Jesus was mighty in word and in deed. Now, we already read this in Acts 7:22 that Moses was. Let me just read it to you again, and we don't have to move from where we are. And Moses was learned in all the wisdom of the Egyptians and was mighty in words and in deeds. Well, guess what? Jesus was likewise mighty in word and deed. It says basically the exact same thing of him in Luke 24:19. Luke 24:19. And he said unto them, what things? And they said unto him, concerning Jesus of Nazareth, which was a prophet mighty in deed and word before God and all the people. So just like Moses was mighty in word and deed, Jesus was mighty in deed and word. The same thing was said of both of them. So Jesus is like unto Moses. Number 8. Jesus was rejected by his kinsmen when he came to them. Remember what it says there in John 1 and verse 11? You probably might not even need to turn there. He came into his own, and his own received him not. Right? So Jesus was rejected by his kinsmen when he came to them. And likewise, Moses was rejected by his kinsmen when he came to them. Acts 7:23 through 28. And when he was full 40 years old, it came into his heart to visit his brethren, the children of Israel. And seeing one of them suffer wrong, he defended him and avenged him that was oppressed and smote the Egyptian. For he supposed his brethren would have understood how that God by his hand would deliver them, but they understood not. And the next day he showed himself unto them as they strove and would have set them at one again, saying, sirs, your brethren, why do ye wrong one to another? But he that did his neighbor wrong thrust him away, saying, who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Wilt thou kill me as thou didst the Egyptian yesterday? Then Moses fled at this saying, and was a stranger in the land of Madian, where he begat two sons. So when Moses first came to his brethren, they rejected him. Just like when Jesus came to his brethren, they rejected him. And they said, who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? And you know, there was a parable that Jesus taught, and the men of the parable, when Jesus was sent, he was sent as, I don't remember how the wording there, but anyway, as the householder's son, or whichever parable it was, and they said that we will not have this man to rule over us. We will not have this man to rule over us. Who made thee a ruler and a judge over us? Very similar. Same thing was said to Moses. Number 9. Jesus fled into a foreign land from the king who sought to kill him. And then he also fled from others who sought to kill him as well. Now this is similar to the first one in a way, but it's a bit different. In the first example that I gave there, Jesus was spared from death as a young child. Moses was spared from death as a young child, in both cases, the king trying to kill him. Well, in this case, Jesus fled into a foreign land from the king who sought to kill him. We've already read about that there in Matthew 2:13-14. His parents took him out of there. And in Moses' case, he fled from the king that was attempting to kill him. And I think we've already read that verse as well in Exodus 2:15. Looking back here, I don't know. Maybe we didn't read it. Exodus 2:15. Just go back there and grab that one. Now when Pharaoh heard this, he sought to slay Moses, but Moses fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. So Jesus and Moses both fled into a foreign land from a king who sought to kill them. Jesus also fled from others who attempted to kill him. He did this on a few occasions, one of which is in Luke 4:29-30. Luke 4:29. and rose up and thrust him out of the city and led him unto the brow of the hill whereon their city was built, that they might cast him down headlong. But he, passing through the midst of them, went his way. So he fled. He got away from people trying to kill him. He did it again in John 8 and verse 59. The Jews tried to kill him. This is kind of a common theme in Jesus' life, fleeing from people trying to kill him until his time was come. When his time was come, he didn't flee. Notice that? He fled until the time came that he was supposed to be killed the way that God said he was. So there's a time to flee and there's a time to stay. John 8 and verse 59. Then took they up stones to cast at him. This is when he said, before Abraham was, I am, claiming to be God. Then took they up stones to cast at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. And then again in John chapter 10, 39 through 40, therefore they sought again to take him, but he escaped out of their hand and went away again beyond Jordan into the place where John at first baptized, and there he abode. So very similar to Moses, fleeing to save his life. Jesus did this on multiple occasions. All right, and then we have three more to look at here, and these will go pretty quickly. This is interesting. Jesus was and is a prophet. Jesus was and is a priest. And Jesus was and is a king. And did you know, and I'm wondering, you might not have. You probably knew Moses was a prophet. I mean, you've at least known it for the last 45 minutes, because I've already told you that. You already knew that, I'm sure, before you came here today. Did you know that Moses was a priest? You might not have known that. And I'll bet you didn't know he was a king. But Moses was all three. So let's look at this. First of all, Jesus was a prophet, is a prophet. Matthew 21 and verse 11. Matthew 21 and verse 11. And the multitude said, this is Jesus, the prophet of Nazareth of Galilee. It says in Hebrews 1, 2 that it hath in these last times spoken unto us by his Son. So Jesus was a prophet that spoke God's words to us. And Moses was a prophet. We know this from several verses, one of which is Deuteronomy 34 and verse 10. Deuteronomy 34 and verse 10. And there arose not a prophet since in Israel like unto Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. So Moses was a special prophet, as is Jesus. And this is probably, if when most people look at this verse and they see that Moses said he would raise up a prophet like unto me, most people probably think, well, yeah, Moses was a prophet, Jesus was a prophet, and that might be about it. Maybe one or two other things if you could think about it. But as you've seen here, there are literally dozens of similarities. It goes way beyond him just simply being a prophet. The second thing here, and the second office that Jesus holds, similar to Moses, is that of a priest. We know that Jesus is a priest. Hebrews, the book of Hebrews makes that very clear. Hebrews 4:15 is one verse. Hebrews 4 and verse 15. It says, for we have not an high priest which cannot be touched with the feeling of our infirmities, but was in all points tempted like as we are, yet without sin. So Jesus is our high priest, made after the order of Melchizedek. And Moses was a priest, actually. Psalm 99 and verse 6. Psalm 99 and verse 6. You got to go digging for these other ones. It's easy to figure out Moses was a prophet, but when you want to find that he was a priest and a king, you really have to dig. Psalm 99 and verse 6. Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that call upon his name. They called upon the Lord, and he answered them. We know Samuel was a prophet and a priest, for that matter. He grew up under Eli. It says there, Moses and Aaron among his priests. We know Aaron was the high priest, but yet it says Moses among his priests. Remember when it was said, I just thought of this, remember when Saul, King Saul, prophesied and they said, is Saul among the prophets? You know what they were saying? When he says, is he among the prophets? You know what they're saying? He's a prophet. Right? He's among the prophets means he's a prophet, right? Moses and Aaron among his priests, which means they were priests. Moses was a priest. He was of the tribe of Levi. I mean, obviously Aaron was, right? When you look at, I think Levi was Moses' great-grandfather. If you look up the genealogy, I think it was his great-grandfather. Obviously, he was Aaron's progenitor, because Aaron couldn't have been a priest unless he was of the tribe of Levi, and Moses and Aaron were brothers, right? So clearly Moses was likewise a Levite, and he was a priest. And then Jesus was and is a king, contrary to the delusions of Schofieldites, dispensational, premillennialists, Zionists, and other loonies. 1 Kings 6 and verse 15, he's not waiting to become a king, he is one. He's been one for 2,000 years. 1 Timothy 6:15. And I'm so glad to see that people are coming around on this issue. Finally, people are turning against Zionism. It's wonderful to see the mainstream, even people in the mainstream are turning against it. It is a great day. Never thought I would see it probably in my lifetime, but I'm really happy to see it. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 15, which in his times he shall show who is the blessed and only potentate, the King of kings and Lord of lords. So Jesus is a king. As a matter of fact, he's the King of kings. And Moses, likewise, was a king. And I'll leave you with this one today. Deuteronomy 33, 4 through 5. Moses was a king. I don't think probably a lot of people realize this. And I'm not talking about a king in Egypt. I mean, he may have been some type of royalty in Egypt, like I mentioned, but I'm not talking about a king in Egypt. He was a king after he left Egypt. Deuteronomy 33, 4 through 5. Moses commanded us a law, even the inheritance of the congregation of Jacob, and he was king in Jeshurun. Jeshurun is another name for Israel. When the heads of the people and the tribes of Israel were gathered together, he was king in Jeshurun. Moses was king of the nation of Israel. He was prophet, priest, and king, which is the three offices that Jesus holds. Jesus is that prophet that was raised up like unto Moses. So next time, and the time after that, we'll look at many other ways in which Jesus was like unto Moses. And I thank you for your kind and patient attention this morning.